Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome you all to Drive Through HR, and first of all, happy Monday, everybody. I know you guys are out there, the work world, wanting to make the best out of this week, so good luck to everyone. And today we have a fantastic guest joining with us. She is one of our favorite, what would I say, a Drive Through HR supporters. And she's always there on Twitter stream, so I'm really wanting to talk to her, and this is the day I thought, okay, she is available, let's bring her on. Barb Becker. Hey, Barb, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nisha, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you here with us today.
Oh, totally. Like I said, you guys have always had a great show with some great people you bring on, so I was actually honored to be asked.
All right. So first thing first, to our audience, those of who don't know of you, we would appreciate if you can talk a little bit about you or what you do and who you are.
Well, my name is Barb Buckner. I have been an HR manager, actually in the HR arena for about 15 years now. The majority of my experience has always been in small business or working for entrepreneurs as a solo practitioner. So unlike a lot of the others who work for big HR departments, I'm the I do everything person.
Wow, that is awesome.
Not always, but we try.
All right, so let's move on to the big question of the 30 minutes. What's keeping you up at night, or let me say, what's keeping your clients up at night?
Well, you know what? Probably what keeps me up the most is my biggest hurdle is getting my company, again, working for a small business, out of that mentality of, this only happens at a big company, that stuff's not going to apply to us. Not understanding that HR does more than just the hiring and we process the payroll, that we actually are the ones that can step back, see the big picture, and help them with their employee relations and the retention problems, especially after this market.
Great. So when it comes to small business, very particularly, what do you see the difference between, you know, an HR working in a larger company and comparing that to an HR working in a smaller company? What are some of the tips and techniques that you would want to share with our audience?
Well, you know, a lot of the things that I see that are, could be improved in a smaller company is they all want to hold on to that we're a family mentality, how we used to do it 20 years ago, not want to making things too complicated, not realizing that little things, as much as they may hate to hear it, doing an employee review. Oh, yeah, that's a waste of time. That's just something to get people money. They don't see the value behind it and actually sitting down and having a conversation with the employees. So the employee knows, hey, I'm valued. They're paying attention to me. Here's what I'm doing right, not only everything what I'm doing wrong. They don't like to get people onto cross-training, and they don't do much with, you know, the disciplinary process. They see it all as a negative, not seeing the positives that can come out of it, not seeing that it can be a coaching session, or that bottom line, you're opening up communication with an employee. You're actually talking to them, not just talking at them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about the bottom line aspect, you know, how can an organization, you know, fix the most challenging, what would I say, issue of making their employees feel valued and mattered? Because I've seen most of the employees feel that it is missing in their organization, and that is one of the foremost reasons for somebody to quit that organization and probably go and pursue some other different organization, right? So when it comes to making that employees feel valued and mattered, what should an organization do?
You know that the easiest, simplest thing that an employer can do to make that employee feel valued, to feel respected, is to have those lines of communication open. They focus so much on, I hired you to do a job, just do it, that they don't take the time to do, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? What are you trying to get out of this job? Where do you want to see yourself in 6 months? They focus just strictly on just go and get the job done. And that's where employees start to feel like they're just a number and not a person anymore. And if you don't have that connection to them, you're not going to have that loyalty with them. You're not going to have that trust with them. And we see it especially now with the way after the market crash and how things have changed, that you can't dismiss those little things that will keep an employee happy. When they get as miserable or upset or feeling devalued in any way, they'll go right to that bottom line, well, you're not paying me enough, I'm going someplace else. And now you're letting an employee go that you spend how much time training and spending your own quality time and your money on them, all because you wouldn't do the simple little things that you can easily do for 5 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about that line of communications, I know in a small business, the role of a manager and the role of a HR, it's actually, as you said, it is very true, a family-oriented mentality that is happening there. But when it comes to communicating the policies and procedure or what is important, or even more than that, just creating a personal touch, managers can create a wide level of engagement approach among their employees. So what do you say is the role of a manager when it comes to, you know, if anything goes wrong, yeah, we have your back, don't worry, or something like that? What do you think?
Relaying it to the employees, you know what, first of all, comes out actually telling them what's going on and actually having it documented so they can look back and look at it. There is so much in a small company where people will say one thing and then you'll find out a week later they'll do something else, and then it starts with the whole, well, you said this, and they are doing that, and how come I can't do this? Getting the managers, along with upper management, to commit to, this is the approach we're going to take, this is the direction we want to go in, we all need to have buy-in on this. It can't be one of those, well, this person's been with us for 20 years, so let's treat them differently than the person that we just hired 5 years ago. It starts to cause problems within the ranks, not even realizing it. You're trying to be a good person, but there's a reason why there has to be a structure, and there's a reason why everybody has to have a part in it. And the minute that starts to fall apart, you have a domino effect.
Right. So what happens when a change happens, let me say, if anything, based on changes in the management or changes in the leadership, or even if it is a merger and acquisition, that ambiguity factor, I hope you can understand what I'm saying. So how do you kind of nullify that ambiguity factor when the organization is going through a change, and what's the role of HR?
You know, it also always depends on what change is going on. Every company will think every change they put out there, or I should say most managers will think every change they put out there is for the positive. If you're not communicating it back to your employees, if you're not helping them understand why you're going through the change, they won't take ownership in it. They're going to resist it like any other person's going to. First thing they're going to say, even the employees, we've always done it this way, I'm not doing that. An example I can use is we just implemented a new software system. And that's one of the things I'm hearing. The employees don't want to do it. They want to go do it the old way. Well, have you taught them how to do the new way? Well, we're getting there. Well, until you get there, you're going to have resistance. So bring them in on board, show them what's going on, help them understand. You're still going to have issues. There's always going to be that fear factor that keeps people away from change. But as long as you're, again, not talking at them, but talking with them, explaining it to them, they get off that defense so much quicker. And actually will be like, okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a try.
So how do you think employers can attain trust from their employees?
I guess showing that they're actually part of the process as well. It's another thing of them just sitting back and saying, hey, this is the change we're going to do. Go ahead and do it. Actually showing that they're part of it, that they're struggling just as much, but always trying to maintain that positive attitude. That's another problem I see with some of the managers is they'll get swept up into it because, again, they're trying to be a family with their employees, and they'll start complaining about the same thing the employees are complaining about, and now you've just made the monster even bigger. You've got to keep it, again, if we're doing any type of change, and it doesn't matter what size of environment it is or if it's a small change or a huge change, it's keeping everybody focused back on the target. And I think that's where HR has to come in even stronger, especially in smaller companies, is we've got to be out there to catch those things as they're starting to happen before they snowball into something bigger.
Great. So, well, talking about, you know, small businesses, I've seen when it comes to larger business, some of the functions of HR tend to be outsourced to a third party, right? But when it comes to small business, I don't necessarily see that because they can manage it from their end, and they have that resources and they have that mentality to do that. So what do you think some of the challenges when it comes to outsourcing some of the functions of HR, and why do you think, no, it's not a good practice to probably not to, you know, outsource?
Some things I don't think work for a small business to be outsourced. A lot of the firms will work off a boilerplate as far as how they think every company is going to react and every company is going to work regardless of which function they're being given. Small businesses always have that edge to them. There's always one part of them that stands them out from everybody else. In my example, we're in a niche market. We're in the boating industry, so it's not something that's very commonplace in Chicago. So things that I could go to a staffing firm for that they could easily fill for any other firm, they have a hard time filling for me. In not having that understanding of how what you're doing is going to fit into the company itself can sometimes cause more problems than it's actually solving.
That's true. So as you said in your company, I would like to know a little bit more about what are some of the innovative ways to find and attract talent at your organization.
You know, we just had the discussion on Friday, which is kind of funny because I was hearing from other managers how, well, you know, back in the day, we used to place an ad in the paper and we got responses. Yeah, that may have still worked even 5 years ago, but it doesn't work as much nowadays. Not to say that we still don't. I mean, Craigslist is my friend right now. But we are, like most companies right now, relying heavily on referrals. We will reach out to our customer base. We'll reach out to our employees. We'll reach out to industry organizations that we're part of, trying to find that next employee and actually finding better quality employees that way than actually posting an ad in the paper anymore.
That's interesting. So what do you think are some of the tools that you have found really interesting and wanting to explore more, and you think, okay, without this particular tool, I cannot do my recruitment? I mean, any social media tools or techniques or any apps that you have found useful?
You know, unfortunately, they're only getting into social media now for the marketing standpoint, because we have a huge e-commerce site that's part of our company. They play a little bit on our Facebook page. They do a little bit on Twitter. As far as the recruiting aspect, it's still a very controlled market. I would like to see us be able to get into more active roles in the industry organization so that we have that upfront facing with them instead of just the owner being on the boards and that's it. I think we need to get more of our employees involved and more of them exposed to it. A lot of our guys are sailors because, again, we're in the boating industry, and they'll participate in the various races that we have all summer long, but it's not the same as when you're going out trying to recruit people to come work for you. That works for sales, not for recruiting.
That's true. Well, in fact, we haven't had that many guests who have talked about boating industry or, you know, an HR that is managing sailors at an organization. So this is really an inspiring story to our audience and really fresh. So if
well,
you can tell us,
ours can be really a challenging one because being in the boating industry, we have two busy seasons throughout the year and then two extremely slow seasons. It's not like everyone else that can keep themselves busy all year long. So our biggest challenge is keeping the company busy all year long, giving these employees, because in the past, the owner used to lay employees off. So I will give him credit that that's the one thing he's trying to stay away from now. We'll find things for you guys to do, and that's why we start expanding into other areas in other markets.
So how do you retain your employees when it comes to, you have a standard period of hiring employees because you said that is the season comes and then you need to work for that particular season and something happens like, okay, that period of time, we don't need that many manpower and then that would be the time you might think about laying off some of the employees. So when it comes to retention, retaining that, you know, top talent at your organization or the people that you have been working with your organization for a longer period of time and you're really wanting to make them feel valued and make them feel continued at their organization, how do you kind of fix that challenge of, you know, juggling through one season, yeah, we need to hire people, and the next season, oh, no, we need to lay off people, right?
Well, this is the one aspect that we will outsource for. In our spring and our fall, which are busiest seasons, we will actually use a temp service, and we'll bring on temporary employees to work in our departments. It not only helps our full-time employees, but it gives us kind of that sneak peek as to how well they can do that job in that department. We've got some that come back from season to season. We've got some that we've brought back and been like, you know what, we're going to make you a full-time employee. You're that good. Kind of a test drive routine for us. As far as retaining our good employees, he tries to bend over backwards. I mean, we had a lot of, well, you know, we went from, you know, typical 401k and profit sharing to now we're getting into more EA programs and all of that, things that they hadn't done in the past. And employees are starting to stop and take notice too, going, okay, maybe they really do care about us. The biggest thing that we will do to keep our high talent is continually send them for training. That is an investment that the owner has no problem putting it down money for. We want them to be at the top of their game. We want to be known for that in the industry. And he's been sticking to that. And therefore, most of the top employees will stay for that reason.
Wonderful. Well, as we know, you know, these temporary jobs on rising today's shifting economy, right? Because everywhere we can see that temp employees and some of the people, they choose to go for working in some temp work or temp jobs and then try different things. So why do you say that organizations should hire more temp employees and then use that as an opportunity to hire them as a full-time one if that employee is going to be a right fit for their organization?
Well, you know, I think part of it is that we didn't want to get to that fact of hiring on people and then having to lay them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hit to the employee thinking that they're being fired when they really haven't done anything wrong. It's just a slow time in the business. But the biggest reason is because this is our chance to test drive an employee. We do more than just put you on board and give you a 90-day probation. If we're going through a temp agency, we are assuming that they're being screened. Actually, we'll go out to the one temp agency and we'll screen them with them, and then we'll try you out. And it's one of those, if you work, you don't work out after a week, okay, we'll let you go and replace you with somebody else and see who else can work out. We're not tied into it as we would be bringing that person on board and having to go through that awful process of, I'm sorry, you're not working out, we got to let you go.
All right. So we talked about the pros of hiring a temp employee. So how about the, you know, if we take the other side of the coin, what have some of the issues that you have faced hiring a temp employee and turned out that, oh, it's not working, probably I should try a different one or different employee? So what was the reason? Have you had any sort of experiences like that?
A lot of the reasons why we'll turn down some of the people is because of how quickly they have to pick up on the job. By the time we bring them on board, we're already full swing into our season. We'll spend days training them, usually about a week, and if they haven't picked up by then, we don't see that they're going to continue to pick up as they have to actually go out and do the job themselves. And that's when we'll decide, you know what, if you haven't gotten it by now, you're not going to get it at all. And it becomes a hassle for us because then we have to turn around and ask for a replacement and then go through another few days of training again. So it has its ups and downs to it. If we can get a good crew that we kept bringing in, and that's why we stick with actually one temp service and we keep bringing the same employees back which miraculously are always available every season, because we've already trained them and they can put them more into a plug and play.
That's true. So I'm gonna switch the gear and talk something different, that is about engaging your employees. I mean, one of your previous points, you said making them happy. So do you think happy employees are engaged employees?
I don't think it necessarily means they're engaged. I think it means you have a better chance of getting them engaged. If you don't have them with that happy point to start with, you have one hell of an uphill battle. So if you can try to make them happy and they can start to see this is going to continue and this isn't a one-shot deal and I'm not being given fluff just to get through the day, then they start to engage. Then they start to see that there's a pattern to it.
Mm-hmm. So what have you seen that employees are valuing most when it comes to having a happy workplace?
What they're valuing the most is seeing that they're getting respect, that they're being recognized for the job that they're doing, that they're actually being listened to when they're having problems, not feeling, especially right now as busy as we are, that they're being brushed off. It's, I have an issue, I'm going to come talk about it, and you actually are going to take the time to listen to me. And where their managers may not have the time to do it, that's where myself as the HR manager does have the time and makes the time to do it.
Wonderful. So having worked in a small business, what do you think are some of the lessons that you might thought I should have known it before I'm entering into a small business organization?
That I was going to have to fight an uphill battle as far as the HR person is not just the payroll and the hiring girl. Going to school and going to training and finding out all the aspects of how to be a strategic partner these days, you get into a small business that hasn't been exposed to that and hasn't had people in that type of role before, and suddenly you're bringing a whole complete change to them, and just like with the employees, they're putting the brakes on going, hold on a second, you're coming at us with ideas that aren't going to work here until you can start to show them little bit by little bit how it does work and they can see your value in it. I think if I had known that up front, I probably would have changed my approach on some things in the beginning to make it more smooth. Instead of coming in thinking, okay, I've got all these ideas, you're going to stop and listen, and they don't want to listen.
Great. So what are some of the things you would say HR should stop doing?
That's a good one. Stop trying to always look for the fix. So many times we're looking for an outside answer to a problem instead of taking the time to actually look at the problem we're dealing with to see first how can it be handled in a way that's going to make everybody comfortable before we bring in a whole new aspect to it. We see that all the time when coming to software programs. Everybody wants to go and jump on the latest and greatest thinking, oh, that's going to solve all my problems. Well, we tend to get swept up in that too, thinking, oh, yeah, that's going to work. I've seen it work other places, not taking that time to step back and go, hold on a second, how is it really going to work here, and how am I going to get these people to buy into it so that we can actually try it?
Cool. So one more generic question that I wanted to take, because it's always fascinating to hear the responses from our guests when I'm asking this particular question. So how can we innovate HR?
I don't know. I guess it's slowly finding our own little niche into the game, not expecting that it's there, not expecting that we're going to be recognized for it. It's kind of like playing a game. You've got to figure out where the players are at, where their mentality's at, and how you're going to squeeze yourself into it. And then prove yourself once you're in. That, I think, is the biggest thing. I think a lot of the resistance that we get is that they think we're coming in knowing all the answers and we're trying to shove it down their throat, and we're really not. We're trying to help them see that there's another aspect to it. So it's taking the approach of how are we going to do it. And sometimes it's just that little, hey, give me a shot, let me show you, and then we'll see where we go from there. It's kind of being, I always call it, I'm the preschool teacher. and this is my class that I'm dealing with. How am I going to deal with them?
I love that.
It really does feel like it sometimes.
All right. That's interesting. So I've gone through your blog, and being myself, being a blogger, I always respect those who write and those who create content out there. So when I'm asking...
I haven't been sticking to it lately.
No, you have some pretty good content out there. So what I wanted to ask is, like, you know, I personally drive inspiration from different blogs that I normally read on a regular basis, and even if it is a news outlet, and whenever I go to, you know, some conferences and meeting people in real life and having one-on-one conversation. So where do you personally, you know, drive inspiration from?
You know what, for the longest time I didn't have any. In all honesty, I was one of those that got into this career not knowing how I got into it in the first place. I just seemed to fall into it, and then it was an upward struggle to find my way to get there. I will give John Jorgensen a lot of credit, because I think he's the one who pulled me out of it once I joined Twitter, and he reached out to get me re-involved with CHRM, because that was something I had started in and didn't get any value of it and backed out. And now I will say, thankfully to Twitter, in meeting all of you, that I've been able to draw a little bit from everybody, from Chris Fields, from Tiffany Kuhl, from Susan Avello, you know, from Sabrina Breaker. Everybody has their own little group in there. And now it's being able to reach out to them to see what they have to say and see, actually sometimes even seeing that, yeah, I'm not that crazy. These people think the same way I do. It's kind of helped me get to another place in my career, another level of confidence in my career, I should say.
I know. That's really interesting. That's what everybody feels the same way, I think so, because the social media helps us connect and share our ideas, and then we can know, yeah, what we are thinking is the same that others are also thinking.
We're not the strange people out there in the company. No.
No,
there's others
not
like
at all.
Us.
Yeah. So, Barb, this 2014, rest of the year, what are your future plans? What are some of the conferences that you have on your calendar that you're wanting to go so that people can come and find you?
You know what? I wish I could be going to the HR conferences the rest of the year. That was one thing I can't get my company to back me up on. And unfortunately, the rest of my year is actually being devoted to my volunteer work, because I have a conference I'm doing with them in August. So it won't be until 2015 until I get myself out there in the HR arena.
Great. So talking about volunteering, I have one key question for you. Why should we HR professionals, you know, start volunteering and then support HR associations and then HR conferences? And because I've always seen that many people are doing that, even I am also doing that, but I wanted to hear your thoughts. Why should we volunteer?
Well, you know, the big part why I got into volunteering was mostly after I had gotten laid off from my job. It was something that I used as a way to not only network, but to keep my skill set up, to learn more knowledge than I already had. There's a continued value in it because everything's constantly changing, and there's constantly new players coming into the market and new opinions that you can get, and you can take what's happening in one person's world and see how it can apply to yours. If we keep ourselves out of that, I think we're missing out on a lot of information to where we lose that strategy part of our profession. We can't be that strategic partner if we don't do that.
That's great. Well, Barb, we have about 1 minute left at this point. I really, really want to appreciate you for your support every day, tuning into DriveThruHR and tweeting our guest thoughts and insights on social media and spreading the word. We really appreciate that. And had a fantastic time talking with you for the first time virtually, right?
Yes, definitely. Out of the Twitter world and into real life.
That's cool. So where can people come and find you and connect with you on social media?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at Barb Buckner, and on LinkedIn, it's the same thing.
Great. Well, Barb, have a wonderful rest of the day. And to our audience, we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break.